It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. That means this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we dodged a few raindrops getting in here this morning so we could be live in the studio as always, which is the only thing that makes this fun, really. All you regulars, you know, and we're grateful that you're always with us. And those of you who are tuning in, either by accident or you were told or whatever, try to stick around for the hour. We always promise that you will learn something, and I would be quite comfortable saying we seldom, if ever, disappoint.
I would hope so.
I didn't say it was anything that would make you a lot of money or friends or anything. I just said learn something. So we keep it pretty generic. This is a very, very special day. It is National Bowling Day.
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. It is National Bowling Day, but that's not what's making it special. What's making it special is, what's the exact term?
It is Financial Awareness Day.
Financial Awareness Day, which means...
Thank you to Howard and Angela for telling us about that, too. I was unaware of that.
I had read it this morning and was aware of it, but it's that day when people are supposed to do their part to, shall we say, eradicate some of the financial illiteracy that is way too prevalent in today's society. And I'm not just talking about the young kids either. It goes all the way up the ladder. And that's why we do our part every week by doing this show for free, live, and we answer your questions and all that stuff. So we'll try to do our part to contribute to the awareness of all of the people in the country because, as I repeatedly say, there is no topic that reaches more people than money. We all need it.
It is something we all have to deal with, and most of us are not very good at it.
So in respect of the day, I'm going to teach you the basic rules of money. Money sooner is better than money later. More money is better than less money. And everything else is incidental.
Okay.
How's that for easy? I'd like to keep it at a nice low level here and then build on it through the day. This week in the market, as you probably heard Angela and Howard say, we had some thumbs up. It wasn't a spectacular week, but any time that you keep moving forward and setting records, it's pretty hard to be upset.
Yeah, I knew some records were set this week, but when I sat down this morning to start prepping, I really didn't know which way the market had moved for the course of the week. It's one of those weeks where not much happened, really.
No.
There was a very narrow trading range, and it didn't. There just wasn't a lot of news driving the market.
No spectacular moves up or down.
No
big winners.
And I'm okay with that.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, I think
bore me to tears the rest of the year, and we're
exactly
good.
Exactly. So it's been a good year already, as you mentioned, and so I'm very much okay with a little bit of consolidation right now. Let the moving averages catch up to the market because we are somewhat extended on depending on where you look, less so in small caps, more so in large caps. This was a week that I think we kind of needed. So I was not I was not disappointed by what happened. And there was some good news, though. If you believe that earnings drive the market, you should be very happy with what happened this week and this month. This earnings season has been very, very strong, and quite unusually, it's been stronger on the revenue side than on the earnings side.
I don't remember the last time that happened.
I don't either. I don't know if it's happened since we started doing the show.
I can't remember
all the quarters that we've been reporting on earnings seasons. I don't remember it.
At best, there's a little bit of a challenge that toward the latter part of the earnings season, it falls off.
Yeah.
And the earnings always beat the revenues.
But right now... revenues, the beat rate on revenues is over 80%, and the earnings beat rate is over 75%. Both of those numbers are as high as we've seen outside of the last two quarters, which have both been very, very good.
Yeah, it'd be one thing if it were 45% beating 40%. That would be pretty ugly, but 80% beating 75%, those are numbers, either one of which would bring the house down.
They're truly off the charts good. And the whole year has been like that, too.
Yep.
So it's pretty crazy. But this is why we've been consistently bullish on 2021 and why we haven't worried that the market has been at a series of all-time highs, because we thought that this is what was coming, and now it's proven us correct.
And remember the environment the CEOs were in 16 months ago, 12 months ago, where there was so much uncertainty. No one was willing to place a big bet on a superior comeback, and we had one.
Oh, in fact, tons of companies were pulling guidance. They were not telling you what they thought about the future.
More, like 75% wouldn't even guess.
Right.
And now that's fallen way back down to about half.
Yep. The sort of hidden good news that we didn't necessarily anticipate about this earnings season is that there's more good news to come. And that's what companies are telling us. The more than 20% of companies that have reported so far have raised their forward guidance, meaning that they've said, okay, here's what we did this quarter. And we think that not only is next quarter looking as good as what we had thought before, but we think it's going to look even better than what we thought before. And so when you see, that's a really positive sign about the rest of the year and possibly into next year. Only 4% have lowered their guidance going forward, meaning that if they thought they said, this is what we think we're going to do. Oh, wait, we're not going to do quite that well. So normally that 20% is closer to 10% of companies raise guidance, and that 4% is closer to 8% of companies that lower guidance. So those numbers being twice, the good numbers are twice as good and the bad numbers are half as bad.
And so, yet consumer sentiment.
Yeah, plunged. I don't know.
Biggest drop ever.
Makes no sense. But
there's so many contradictory things out there now. It would take us an hour just to go through all the contradictions.
There is a lot to unpack right now. It's a very unusual time. We had a shock to the system last year, obviously, somewhat self-induced, somewhat virus-induced, but
another one in November.
Yeah, that's true.
Yet another one in January.
An election year does throw different dynamics into the mix. And yeah, so there's been a lot going on. So it's not surprising that we're seeing some contradictory information right now. But by and large, businesses are adapting to all of this and making a ton of money, which is what we want to see.
That is always a good thing when you're a shareholder and the company that's doing well, and your account goes up and everybody gets happier.
Yeah, so I didn't actually say what the results were, but the NASDAQ saw a little bit of pressure this week. Interest rates crept up midweek and then dropped back down on Friday. But the when things are going really well lately, the NASDAQ tends to respond negatively because the market looks at it and says, oh, that means the Fed's going to raise interest rates sooner rather than later. And that's not going to be good for valuation of my growth companies on the NASDAQ.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened this week, because every time the other two indexes went up, the NASDAQ seemed to go down.
Yeah. So yeah, I remember when I first got into this business 20 years ago, there was sort of a rule of thumb. It would be like 2-1, 3-1, sometimes even 10-1. But things move the same direction, at least.
Yeah, no, and not this week.
The past several weeks, it has been either or. And this year, the NASDAQ's kind of been the one taking it on the chin, relatively speaking.
I mean, it's only down 1% less than the Dow for the year. So it really hasn't taken it on the chin.
And that's up 15.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really hard to look at a chart like we're both staring at here with the results of the year and not say, my, this has been a lot of fun.
I would take it. Let's just stop right now and not trade for the rest of the year.
For a month at least. Yeah. All right, we're going to have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we got a lot more to talk about in the market and the employment and various things that impact a lot of people. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have, as usual, a trivia question sponsored, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And I decided to do a trivia question about me and group of millions of fans and friends called baby boomers. It is to that point where some baby boomers, not this one, but some, are retiring. But back in 2019, 250,000 baby boomers retired. How many retired in 2020? And I'll take that within 50,000. See how generous I am on Saturday morning? How many baby boomers took retirement in 2020? And that, of course, leaves a number of jobs to be filled, which leads me, quickly back to you for the Jolts Report.
Yeah, I was just getting to that, and it was pretty incredible. Now, the Jolts Report is a little bit behind in its data, so this data was actually for June, and it showed that there was a record 10.1 million open jobs in the United States in June.
That is a lot of jobs, and especially considering how many unemployed people there are.
It's just actually kind of amazing how many jobs are open right now. Additionally, there is a record low separation rate of 0.9%, meaning that hardly anyone is getting fired. People are, however, quitting jobs at a 2.7% rate, which is pretty high. So not a record high, but higher than what you see in a job market that isn't quite as robust as this one is.
Yeah, one of the interesting data points in there is that teachers are quitting.
They're not quitting, actually. That was one of the interesting things.
I read teachers are leaving all over the place.
No. The opposite. There's way less. For some reason, you would think that teachers would be quitting at a higher rate.
Perhaps I just misread it. I apologize.
That's okay.
That's why there's two of us.
Yeah. That they're sort of the exception to everybody else is quitting and teachers are not. So I don't know why that is.
Well, all teachers are underpaid everywhere you go.
Yeah.
If you're leaving a teaching job to take a teaching job, you're not accomplishing very much except you get a new set of faces.
Plus, a lot of teaching jobs have time benefits such as pensions or things of that nature because they're government jobs.
Exactly.
So it doesn't benefit
That's
you to switch counties.
Not parachute, but anchor.
Yeah, it helps with retention.
Right. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, good morning.
How's things? We're good here.
Things are okay. Things are good.
Good.
Not Micron Technology, but that's... I have Micron Technology, and here's a word to the wise. Even though sometimes we buy stocks, sometimes we do it based on geopolitical concerns, like the chip shortage. Your particular company may have other issues.
Well, that is always true, and that is non-systematic risk that comes with under-diversifying by buying individual stocks, which is why we studiously avoid it.
I see. Okay. Word to the wise.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to take a shot at the trivia.
All right.
I am a voracious reader, and if I recall something I read in Forbes, also... I took notice, being a baby boomer and a migrator from New York. Uh-huh. I'm going to say 3.2 million.
Well, your number from Forbes might be based on a different time frame or something, but it's higher than the one I'm looking for.
Very good. All right. I'll listen for the answer. Have a great weekend.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Yeah, it's not that high, but let's say it's not less than 2019. And actually, you know, kind of funny because 2020 was one of those years. You could argue the COVID response either way, I think, that it would cause it or prevent it. Hard to say. But that's all I'm going to tell you. So you might as well call us and guess, 904-222-8255. All right, you were saying?
We were talking about the Jolts Report. There is a bunch of people leaving their jobs, and that means they're in general... most people leave their jobs to take a better job, a better paying job, or to work at home if they were going into an office. Mm-hmm. That's a big trend right now. So that's a positive sign for workers when the quit rate is that high. And the wages are also creeping higher, especially in the leisure and hospitality industry, where wages are now running 6% above their long-term trend. And that's something that hasn't happened in a long time. Wages have been pretty stagnant in that sector of the economy. Not so much anymore. If you are in that area, you are in high demand, and people are starting to be willing to pay for that. But
and that's actually higher than the rate of inflation, which most industries are not doing right now yet.
That's right. Now, again, this data is all from June, so I'm a little cautious to say that that's exactly what's happening now in August. It'll be really interesting to see the July report because there are some signs that maybe that's slowing down a bit in August, but we'll see. I'm not sure yet. The other data that came out for jobs was the initial claims, and they continued to inch back down towards pre-pandemic levels. Not quite there yet. They dropped by 12,000 this week to 375,000, and continuing claims also fell. They're down to 2.8 million. And
that's a little more encouraging number than we've been seeing in that
very
department.
Very much so. Florida,
which means they're running out of benefits.
That's what's happening. Florida, Texas, and New Jersey posted the largest declines. You notice that two of those are states that dropped the extra unemployment insurance.
And notice that at least one of those states is getting sued by
people. I'm sure they all are.
I can name two of them for sure, but I think there's a lot more than that. Out of 25, I'll bet there's no less than five that are being sued by the people who want to keep those benefits coming.
And there's now less than a month before the pandemic programs end, so we may see a big drop in that in the next month's data.
If certain people in Congress get their way, that might not happen.
Right, which seems to be a terrible mistake right now, but we'll that's not really up to
us. I have a column of things on my little scratch pad here that says bad economic policy.
Yeah.
That would be extremely bad economic policy.
Paying people not to work
when the JOLTS report is 10.2 million open.
Yeah, it's that's a record by a decent margin.
A lot. I remember when we were kind of dropping jaws at 7 million.
Yeah, that's right.
And now it's 10. And hello, people. Wages going up, 10 million jobs open. Wake up in the morning and get dressed and go get a job.
So I bet you were pretty happy this week, too, because all your cryptocurrency was rising like crazy.
My crypto is worth exactly what I paid for it, finally, because I don't have any.
Okay. But, yeah, it was pretty interesting. It's been on a tear lately.
Yep.
Bitcoin is up 49% from its recent low. And that's sort of on the low side of all the coins.
Yeah.
Ethereum is up 70%. But the bottom of the market, which is made up of hundreds of different small cryptocurrencies that really don't have much impact on market cap, they've more than doubled their market cap recently. So the people are buying up the lesser known coins.
Why?
I have no idea why, but that's what's
because
happening.
Because they can.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, it's just so weird. And I've got a note right here. The Federal Reserve's Brainard, who I'm not 100% sure if it's he or she or if it is misappropriately named or not, Brainard. But can't wrap my head around not having the U.S. Central Bank digital currency. Why?
So
why do we need a digital currency?
That person wants one?
Wants one. Can't wrap your head around not having one.
Okay.
A little odd in my world because I don't know of anybody yet who can tell you what it is. I've read voraciously and listened to people all over the place. No one has yet given me an explanation that I could convince a 12-year-old about.
Yeah. It's
so weird.
It's a difficult concept.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's something. It's really something. Nothing, isn't it?
I have an announcement as well. A while back, more than a year ago, some good friends of ours lost their son to childhood cancer,
mm-hmm.
and they have since gone on to form a foundation, the Joe DiWalle Foundation, and this foundation is raising money for research for the specific type of leukemia that took their son. And they did a golf tournament in the spring. It was a huge success. They were able to write a check for well over $10,000, and that went to St. Jude's.
Nice.
This one is going to the childhood cancer research, I believe, arm of St. Jude's. And they're doing a fun run, a 5K, and it's going to be in Nocatee in November. It's actually on November 27th. And it is, hold on, I'm pulling up the information now. It's in the morning of the 27th, and we would really appreciate it if anyone wants to run. It's very easy to sign up. Just go to joestrong.org, joestrong.org, and sign up. It's we have preferred pricing up until later this month or next month, and it should be a great day. So joestrong.org, come on out and join us for the 5K.
What day exactly?
November 27th. It starts at 8 a.m.
Okay, so you're getting past the heat and humidity time.
Yeah.
It would be a lot more fun.
It's Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Okay,
good. Burn off some of those calories.
Yeah. Ooh, perfect timing. All right, we've got a few seconds left, so I'm not going to delve into anything. But when we do get back, I want to talk about inflation. I know I've been harping on it a lot lately. But today's topic is the unnecessary inflation and what we can and might do about it. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I am going to re-deliver the trivia question before I take the call who is going to attempt to answer it. So the baby boomer generation, my generation, is retiring now. We have 10 to 12,000 who've been hitting the ages of 62, 65, and 68, so on, for quite a long time now. It was such a huge generation. So in the year 2019, 250,000 boomers retired. How many retired in 2020? And we know the answer is larger than 250 and smaller than 3.2 million. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning.
How are you?
I wanted to give a shot for the trivia.
Sure. Take a shot.
1.5 million.
Ooh, now that was a really, really good guess, and it's a little high.
Oh, well.
Well, it was a really very good idea. You kind of came in and split the difference, and you can never go too wrong on that one. It's still a little high.
All right. Well, that's all I got.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for listening.
All right, so we have narrowed the range a bit from 250 to 1.5 million. All right, did you want to wrap up anything before we get into this a little bit?
No, I touched on everything that I wanted to do.
Good. This was a week in many respects. First off, it was 7 days, but I digress. The numbers that came out on the economy were largely oriented toward inflation. And what we saw for people of a certain age, shall I say, I believe would be very disturbing. And they were to me, because we've lived this and I don't want to relive it. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics, part of the government, produces all the data on inflation, that sort of thing. They do things that are labor-related, and labor, of course, is the cost of labor is very much dependent on the COLAs, the cost of living increases. So because of that, they've been charged with preparing the most commonly used price indices that we all kind of hang our hats on. So on Thursday, we came out with the producer price index, and that's the one that happens before you get it. And it has some longer-term consequences than others because its data is so well-developed that it goes a long ways back, and you can get a really good trend line. And it showed an increase of 1% for July, following an increase of 0.8% in June. Now, you can imagine, just sit here and think for a moment, if prices went up 1% every month of your life,
oh, ouch,
you are going to be broke really, really soon. Durable goods for households rose 7.2% compared with a year ago. That's not a monthly one. Got to keep that in mind. So those of us who are thinking numbers like that, who remember Jimmy Carter and Paul Volcker, know that there was some real pain to get over this stuff, and that they raised interest rates up to the ceiling, and then they took out the ceiling and kept going, and kind of had to make the whole thing crash and settle down. Well, it's not happening, and you wonder how far they're going to let it go until something does happen. The overall monthly gain of 1.1% would be a 40-year record, except that it was exceeded a month earlier. So now you're getting into a lot more of the discussion about the transitory thing, and I'll get more into that. The great thing about the indices being reported is that they can scare people, and the worst thing is that hardly anybody even understands or pays attention to it. So I could bring it up and show you a little bit about what it's made up of. This is a partial list of price increases over the past year. Cookware, cutlery, and flatware, up 3.5%. Products of steel mills, 10.8% higher. Home electronics, now this is the one that we all know that we've been following electronics forever. They get better and better, and the price falls and falls and falls. Right? Best deal around is next year's TV. Well, they rose 1.9% in July, and they're up 3.6% compared with a year ago. That is the largest increase in this area since 1979 and the largest monthly gain since 1981. And if you recall back in those years, those were the years of the rampant inflation. Prices for home electronics have pretty much fallen over the last 60 years, except for that blip, and now there's this blip. Household appliances jumped 2.9% in July over June. Major household appliances were up 3.2%. Cooking appliances rose 2.6%, and compared with a year ago, they're up 6.2%. Gasoline is up more than a dollar a gallon since a year ago today. Household furniture jumped 1.2% in July alone, according to the PPI. Compared with a year ago, the index for home furniture is up 9%. A broader category that includes furniture and other household goods is up 7.2%, which is the largest annual gain since 1982. These are the kind of things that you can't really hide from people. Even if they don't understand or pay attention to the statistics, they go to the store. It shows up in their credit card bills. It shows up in the grocery store. It goes up when they go shopping for anything. And people are getting the feeling that there is something wrong, and you can see it in the approval numbers. And this administration's approval numbers are starting to fall. And what I mentioned earlier, what is absolutely critical, is that consumer sentiment took its biggest fall ever. It dropped about, what, 13-plus points in a month?
It was a huge drop.
Yeah, it really was. And it's kind of scary. Fortunately, market sentiment, or maybe unfortunately, market sentiment is still higher than consumer sentiment. We probably would rather have those two things switch around.
I would.
Yeah, but not anything we can do about it except report on it. The worst thing about all of this is it was so unnecessary. When the new president decided that if Bush did it, I'm going to undo it on day one or day two, the first thing that was impacted was
Bush or Trump?
Energy.
You mean Trump?
Trump, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I said Bush.
No, yeah, stuck in the past, I guess. Shouldn't be. But anyway, when Biden said, no pipeline, no this, no that, no drilling, it started a process that I don't like. Interrupting for a quick phone call. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Quick guess, I won't burn time.
No problem.
Let me get this for you. 1.00.
Let's see how that stacks up here. That is a little bit low, unfortunately.
Okay, that helps somebody.
Well, you've really narrowed it down.
Somebody.
Yeah. Well, we'll send you a thank you card, and we'll send them the prize.
That'll work.
I appreciate the call.
I appreciate it.
Thanks very
did
much.
Did you miss me?
Yes, very much.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Playing horseshoes now. Close is going to start counting pretty soon. Anyway, it started with energy, and if you look at a state like New Mexico, it's almost all federal lands that are being drilled on for oil. Then you move over and get into Texas, it's almost all private. So certain states like New Mexico are getting hurt really badly. The Dakotas are getting hurt. So the whole kiboshing of the energy industry has changed our very brief foray into energy independence. It has given that all back, and now we're dependent on OPEC again. So they went to OPEC and begged them to start producing more oil.
I believe they said, pretty please.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that's going to result in, if anything, I believe, a little more backlash. They're going to be more, let's say, how about this way? They're going to be less interested in complying with our wish because of that. That's what I think.
Yeah, and it's a major sign of weakness too.
It is.
And you leave yourself open for other, they can lever you, and it's just a terrible situation to be in.
Right. But transportation and energy do not only impact you when you're filling up your all of a sudden $60, $70, $80 gas tank. It affects everything you buy, too, because everything you buy is transported. About 10% of the price of the food that you eat is all due to transportation. When that goes up a lot, your food goes up. And that's just the beginning. I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into this thing for a little while, and then we're going to say, well, there's a way it could be fixed, and I don't know if anybody's going to be, what's the word I'm looking for, politically savvy enough to actually do something about it, because it is so divided up on the Hill. It's very sad. So it's only going to be people, us, complaining that make these people listen. So we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. We've got a narrow range now of how many baby boomers retired in the year 2020, up from 250,000 the year before. And we know that a million is too light. So there's been a rather dramatic change overall. Anyway, this being the financial awareness day that it is, supply and demand is a very good start to understanding things about finance and economics. What we're doing today is we are creating demand by giving people money, $300 here and there and a bunch of other things, and the demand goes up. We'll talk about supply after. Good morning, Bosco.
Good morning, y'all. Another great program. It shines a lot of reality on what we're in for today and in the future, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is unfortunate.
Until we get our governor in.
Yeah. Well, see what happens, won't we?
Seeing more and more signs and hats and flags, so it's definitely...
Exactly. Right now, I'm more interested in seeing whether Larry Elder can become the governor of California.
That would be funny.
Sarah and I were laughing about that possibility today.
Keep my eye on that as well.
Yep.
According to the polls, it's a real possibility.
It is a real possibility.
Not the most likely, but it is possible.
They got to show up. We'll see how much people really care about this stuff by who shows up. All right. You want to take a shot at it?
Yes, I was thinking 1.25 mil.
That's just a little bit high. Sorry about that, but
hand grenades.
Exactly right. We're all around it. All right. We appreciate your call. Thanks for listening.
You bet.
All right. So that when demand rises and supply stays the same, that the result, you can see it on the graph if you're familiar with the graph, the result is prices. What's the variable in supply and demand? Well, if you move one or freeze one and the other one goes one direction or the other, the variable is prices. So the outcome of supply and demand is what the price is about. Now, we're paying all these people not to work, and you can bet the usual suspects in Washington, D.C. right now are going to put a horrendous amount of pressure on Biden to extend that September 6th deadline for the extra UC payments. That means those 10.2 million unfilled jobs are not going to get filled, at least not the way they should, which means there's going to be shortages of supply because we don't have enough laborers to build the products and ship the products. You can't get a trucker today.
So we're not heartless either.
No,
and
not
at all. If you can show me this population of people in the United States right now that their jobs still 18 months after the start of the pandemic do not exist, I will gladly pay them the extra unemployment insurance. But who are they? I don't think they exist.
Nobody can find them.
Theoretical person that politicians like to talk about that does not exist.
It must be the people who, when they answer a job ad, they either won't schedule an interview or they'll schedule it and not show up.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's happening. We see it in every pizza parlor and every manufacturing facility. And like I said, you can't get a trucker. You can train a trucker and pay between $65,000 and $100,000 and can't get one.
Nope.
And, you know, as I used to say when I was young, what's up with that?
It's I don't know.
It's truly amazing. It's bad policy, and bad policy has to be improved, or the inflation is not going to stop. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning. How are you folks doing today?
Fantastic. How about you?
Oh, great. I will take a guess of 1.1.
Well, now, 1.1 million, and that is not within 50,000 one way or the other. That is dead on. How about that? We have a winner.
Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, you know, you're always willing to stick your neck out, and once in a while, it doesn't get chopped off.
That's right.
We've disappointed you a few times, I know, but today, right on.
Hey, that's great. A great show today. Enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. You can think about the impact of this. 250,000 retire in 19 and 1,000,001 in 20. What's going to happen now?
Yeah, is it going to be so in a normal year it would be 3.6 million? Is that 10,000?
Yeah, I'm not sure what number Mike picked up, but I think he said it was from Forbes, so I'll see if I can figure that out. But anyway, the pace of us retiring is kind of scary because we have a shortage of people willing to take a job now. What happens if a whole bunch of us leave the workforce? That's going to leave, again, the demand will be there because we'll be retiring on incomes, but the supply is still going to be curtailed by the lack of labor. And we've got plenty of land. We've got plenty of capital. Labor's in an extreme shortage position right now, and it's leading directly to this inflationary cycle we're in, and it's really scary when you think about the components are going to add on to this.
Well, actually, I think that 1.1 million would be a really light year of retirements.
I think it's compared to the next third. Couple. That's why I was talking about COVID before. What would be the end result of COVID? Would it be forced retirements go up? Probably. But voluntary retirements would probably be down because it hurt the stock market badly, so people weren't feeling really good about that. So if you think about all the factors in there, I could see the rate of retirement going sharply up.
I think companies are going to pay to keep older workers that are not retiring.
Well, we know. We've seen it in our client base. We've had people beg with good-sized checks not to retire.
Yeah, a lot of government employees that has happened to that had already scheduled their retirements. Wait, stay on another year. We'll pay you all sorts of money.
Yeah, carrots and sticks, and that's a pretty good-sized carrot. So stay tuned, as they say, and buy early, I guess.
Yeah, and Leroy, thanks for the call. We have your information. I'll get you out the gift card.
Yeah, this is a very, very significant problem setting up, I believe. And when you the word of the week, the word of the month, is transitory. The Fed, president, so on, they're all saying this inflation is transitory. Well, what does that mean? Well, it can mean different things to different people and different things to different commodities, for instance. Let's say on a general price level, we've had an increase in inflation. I'll go with the number they're saying, about 5.2% in a year. So if you look at that 5.2%, they're saying now it's going to fall. So maybe it'll fall to 4%. Well, that 4% is not off the old base. The 4% is on the 1.052 times higher. So you get 4% of that, and then maybe 3% of that, and it keeps going up. So I was telling Adam it's a little hard to visualize, but if you're familiar with the bell curve, you put two bell curves side by side, and on the left we have the rate of change of inflation. So it goes up to peak where we might or might not be right now. And then on the downside of the bell curve, it's a reduced rate of going up or reduced rate of inflationary change. But on the other one, we got a bell curve. That's the actual prices we pay for things. You get up to the top and it goes up again. So the downside never gets used because the price level in general keeps going up. That's how they're trying to use this term transitory to fool us. They're trying to make us think that all these high prices we're paying are going down. When do you think you're going to pay less for gasoline than you do now?
Oh, I think there will be a day.
It will not be for at least 2 or 3 years.
Correct. Yeah, we have to get back to energy independence or at least moving towards it.
And it won't happen under this administration.
No, definitely not. But it won't be like this forever either.
No, but they're trying to say in a few weeks or a few months, this thing is all going to go away. And I'm saying you've got years of this.
Part of it.
Part of it, wood came down.
Lumber came down. Auto prices are going to come down.
Especially used rental cars.
Because
they went up artificially from shortages.
Well, I don't think it's artificial. I think it's a temporary situation. So when they reference transitory inflation, they're talking about those specific things.
Right.
The problem is there's a whole other part of the economy where that is not going to be the case.
The true term inflation is a description of the overall price level of goods and services.
Yes.
And then there's that little unsung thing that nobody's talking about right now. Where's the rate of inflation suddenly being felt the most? In the service sector. That's where wages and salaries are going up and the services are becoming much more expensive. And that is not going to go away either.
No, that is not.
So what I'm telling you now is keep an eye on this inflation thing, and it's going to be rough. And the only way to fix it for the average American is at the polls. Is it 2022 yet?
Not yet.
So think about that if you're thinking about retiring, too. What are you going to live on? Could you live if inflation kept going for another 10%, 15%? Not that I'm trying to be a gloom and doom person, but it's not realistic to believe that we're going to get out of this, like the government says, in a transitory manner. Just give it a few weeks. That's not going to happen. So with that bit of gloom and doom, I'll say everybody have a wonderful weekend. And you know, things aren't in the toilet just yet. Let's try to keep them that way. We will be back next week with a little more fun and games. And we'll see you at 10 o'clock. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.